Okay, can everyone hear me? Thank you very much for that introduction, and it's really a pleasure to be here. And I also want to introduce my colleague, Randy Cinco, who's with the University of Michigan, who's also going to be co-presenting with me today. As you can see, we have a large research team that we're representing, and wonderful colleagues and collaborators. So our focus is going to be around intersectionality, looking at the mental health and specifically depression and suicide of LGBTQ students. And we're looking at the intersection in terms of gender and also race, and looking at LGBT identity factors. We have no relationships to disclose. Again, in terms of what we're trying to look at is thinking about risk and protective factors, but how is it that intersectionality in terms of race and also gender may be playing a role? And we're specifically interested in what we call LGBTQ identity factors. And we'll be talking more about those factors in a few minutes. So in terms of putting some context to this presentation, as we all know, LGBTQ individuals are at increased risk for psychological distress and also mental health problems and disorders and such. And when we look at a college student population, we also find that similar trend happening as well. Most of the studies have looked at only sexual orientation. There is one study that has looked at trans students specifically, and so there's certainly a need to look at more research looking at trans students. When we think about why that might be happening, one of the sort of go-to models that we think of would be the minority stress model, where we think about students living or individuals living in a heterosexist, cisgenderist world, thinking about the increased stress related to stigma, discrimination, internalized stigma being a contributing factor to chronic stress, and that putting us at increased risk for negative outcomes, including mental health problems. So when we think about fact of discrimination and also mental health, that we need to think about both of these things together. So looking at colleges and our campuses, that when we think about campus, you know, many of us are at universities and colleges, and we think, oh, okay, there's this discourse of diversity. However, when we look at marginalized groups and also women, that certainly reports of a chilly climate are quite prevalent. So this chart demonstrates some findings from one of our earlier studies that looked at various forms of discrimination on one particular college campus among sexual minority and heterosexual students. And across all of these indicators, with the exception of ambient incivility refers to disrespectful behaviors, that sexual minority students experienced more of these. This particular graph is just reporting on have you experienced it at least once in the past year, but even when we look at it as continuous variables, we also find significant differences. When we think about hostility, we're talking about victimization, more blatant forms. But as we all know, that heterosexism and genderism and other forms of discrimination have become much more subtle and sort of more nuanced in recent years. So when we look at, for example, heterosexist harassment, which is things like I was pressured to be more masculine if I'm male identified, for example, are also more prevalent amongst sexual minority students. So when we think about then what does this mean for us in terms of mental health and looking at minority stress theory or minority stress model, that certainly studies have demonstrated a positive effect between various forms of discrimination and covert discrimination as well, and negative outcomes. So when we think about more blatant forms of victimization, such as being threatened or being verbally attacked, physically attacked, that certainly there are relationships with negative outcomes, including mental health outcomes. Similarly with covert discrimination, in one of our earlier studies, we found that in terms of experiencing LGBTQ microaggressions was significantly associated with psychological distress. As we noted on the bottom of this slide, again, little is really known about trans students, and including in terms of the role of discrimination on their outcomes. This one existing study says that they experience more discrimination, they have higher rates of negative mental health and such. However, they have not actually looked at the role of discrimination in that process. However, it's not all that bad. Yes, there's lots of negative things, but there's also some protective factors that may be existing. So when we look at the existing research, we think about, well, what are some of those individual level or personal level factors? So some of our earlier work has highlighted the role of self-esteem and the role of self-acceptance in terms of accepting one's identity as an LGBTQ individual. Interpersonally, finding that students who have LGBTQ friends or a sense of perceived social support can also foster a sense of resilience and function as a protective factor to mental health outcomes. However, one of the things we know is that in this field, like in other fields of research, so in higher ed, and I'm in social work, in fact, that, and as our moderator introduces, that intersectionality is a current method and theory that we're using, that we need to be thinking about the role of multiple social identities. So when we think about intersectionality, really we're trying to understand the fact that these social identities are, and their related systems of oppression, are interconnected. We can't be separating them out and sort of, you know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. And this causes us to say, okay, well, we need to at least account for various forms of social positions and social identities in our analysis. And often we think about that as oppressed and privileged social identities or social positions. When we think about LGBTQ students, one of the things in our work is that we've been really drawn into thinking about race, the role of race, and also the role of gender. And when we think about gender, we're talking about cisgender and also transgender within that. So some of the earlier research around attitudes, for example, has highlighted that when we think about attitudes towards LGBTQ individuals among students, that students who identify as racial minorities or African-American black students tend to report more negative attitudes, and also similarly amongst male students compared to their female counterparts. So that's really driving us to start thinking about, is there a role here for race and gender when it think about mental health outcomes? And certainly other research has highlighted the fact that internalized stigma tends to be higher amongst some minority racial groups as well. So when we think about this field of research, we feel like there's really just not enough attention to intersecting identities amongst college students, amongst queer college students. That when we think about trying to understand this, of course, quantitatively, is that there's really no clear guidelines in the literature about how to do this, how to tackle this. And so what we've been looking at is using some of McCall's writings about intercategorical and intracategorical complexity, where we're going to look at differences between social groups and then within social groups. And of course, one of the requirements in taking this approach is that we're accepting these analytical categories, for example, gender, as markers of social inequality, so thinking about that as well. However, we want to move beyond that in this field of research and looking at more critical factors related to marginalization. So in this particular study, we're looking at LGBTQ identity characteristics, which include LGBTQ shame, pride, salience, and also one's outness on campus. So overall, what we're aiming to do in this work, using a national convenience sample of LGBTQ students, looking at, well, what are the factors that are associated with depression and attempted suicide, two critical mental health areas of concern when we think about college campuses, and specifically thinking about risk factors in terms of discrimination. And we're looking at both blatant and microaggressions, so both victimization and microaggressions, and also looking at social support as a factor. And adopting an intersectional lens, we stratify our sample based on gender, so including cis and trans students, and then also looking within cisgender students based on male, female. We do look at the interaction of race and these LGBTQ identity characteristics. So the data for this study came from the National Study of LGBTQ Student Success, which was conducted by myself and my colleague Chris Wren, who's at Michigan State, in 2013. This is a sample of 952 LGBTQ identified students. 50%, approximately 50%, were recruited at a large LGBTQ student conference, which was held in Lansing, Michigan, and then the other remaining approximately 50% were recruited through online networks, and students had the opportunity to enter for a random draw and such. In terms of our demographics, you can see that most of our participants identified as cisgender women. And then in terms of sexual orientation, that the same gender loving category was our largest. We are combining some groups here just for the sake of brevity. Most of our students identified as non-Hispanic white. And interestingly, this is different than other LGBT studies, is that we had a very high proportion of students who would be considered low SES based on Pell Grant eligibility. In terms of how we measured our primary outcomes and our other primary variables, we used the PHQ-9 for depression, and we are using it categorically here in this study, so looking at minimal, moderate, and severe depression. Attempted suicide was a single item measure where we asked about attempts in the past year. LGBTQ microaggressions, so we used two scales. One is the LGBTQ microaggressions, which was a recently published scale. We use the similar trans microaggressions and LGBTQ victimization. All of those scales are measured on a 0 to 5 range, and with 5 being I experience them very frequently. And perceived social support, we look at the subscale from Zimitz and colleagues' scale. We did use a one-item scale or one-item measure for overall student support, so sense of support. Both of those are measured on a, the first one is on a 1 to 7 and then 1 to 4 scale. And then these are our identity characteristics. So pride was, I'm proud to be LGBTQ. Shame, I'm disturbed when people can tell I'm LGBTQ. Salience, I believe being LGBTQ is an important part of me. These were adapted from Mayfield's internalized homonegativity scale, and we used a 6-item scale to measure outness. So I'm gonna turn it over to Brandy.
For all the characteristics that you saw in the preceding table, we compared between cisgender and transgender, and then also between women and men. And since we're doing a lot of comparisons, we used a Monte Carlo simulation to compensate for multiple comparisons. For regression, for analysis methods, suicide was done with binary logistic regression. And then for depression, we had 3 categories. And we use proportional odds logistic regression, which allows us to estimate one set of coefficients, one for medium to high to low, and one for low or medium to high. And then we evaluate the goodness of fit with the C statistic for logistic regression. Now, here we have the results as far as a picture and a written description. But now its ratio is greater than 1, it means that the fact it's a risk factor, and if it's less than 1, it's a protective factor. So in the graph, you see a line down the 1 category with the risk factors on the right and the protective factors on the left. Risk factors include being transgender, bi or pansexual, and having a disability and experiencing microaggressions. Protective factors were older age and social support from friends and social support overall. As far as intersectional estimates, we found that salience was associated with depressive symptoms among students of color and shame among non-Hispanic white students. And here's some more intersectional estimates. I don't think we have time, due to time limitations. I'm just going to... Okay. Okay. You did find that among... actually, non-Hispanic white was a risk factor among transgender students. We were surprised to see that. We were thinking of possibly the trans students of color built up some resilience by having lived in our society as people of color, and may have built up some resilience in that area. I'm just going to move on here in the interest of time. And suicide and risk factors were being transgender, having a disability. Pell Grant is the same as low SES, microaggressions or victimization. Protective factors, here we saw bisexual being a protective factor, age and social support. And these the intersectionality estimates were very interesting. We saw that outness reduced the odds of attempted suicide by 1/2 among both non-Hispanic whites and persons of color. It's one of the most interesting findings. And then intersectional estimates, we find right, some differences in risk factors as we stratify. If you look at cisgender, we see microaggressions among women, disabilities among men. Among trans people, lower SES was a huge predictor of attempted suicide. And I'm going to turn my presentation back over to Mr. Woodford. Dr. Woodford.
Thanks, Brandy. Okay, we're going to skip this slide in the thinking about time. So certainly we know that supporting LGBTQ students is important. These findings, which we've gone over very quickly, highlight the importance that we need to be thinking actually about some of the nuances, looking at differences within groups, but also between groups. So this one example, when we think about microaggressions, and minority stress theory would suggest that microaggressions are going to be a risk factor, but in fact we don't find that for all groups. And so, for example, not finding it to be significant for trans students, we wonder if that's about more resilience amongst trans students. Similarly, we find more nuanced factors around the LGBTQ identity factors. The example of outness, and that we find it to be a protective factor generally amongst LGBTQ students of color and non-Hispanic whites, but then when we look at other groups and thinking about subpopulations, that we do not necessarily find it to be significant across all of them. So we do need to be thinking about, yes, there are some consistent risk factors or protective factors, so such as age was a protective factor across depression in all groups, but we need to be thinking about more nuanced, informed prevention and intervention policies and intervention and programs. And certainly when we think about where we want to go forward with this, we want to look at other social identities. Of course, we have the limitations of sample size and such, but we also need to be thinking about some of these more complex underlying stressors. So thinking about what Lisa Bolig invites us to do in research, and also looking at more systemic forms of exclusion, and also the role of policies and programs and such. So we're going to end it there and turn it over to our next presenter. Thank you.